Welcome to Stardust Records, a Star Wars podcast. I'm Savi, your co-host, and I'm here with my other co-host, Lynn. Today, we have a very special guest coming on to our show. You may know him as the writer of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, but also as the writer of Star Wars Bounty Hunters, which just ended its 42-issue run back in January. So, without further ado, we are so excited to give a warm welcome to Ethan Sachs.
So, Ethan, we're so glad you're here, and I just wanted to start off by asking, could you tell us just a little bit about yourself? What led you from journalistic writing to comic writing?
Hi, my name is Ethan Sachs. Most of my adult life, I was a journalist, and I'm a lifelong Star Wars fan, which is, I guess, the connective tissue that led me into comics. I started, basically, most of my career was at the New York Daily News, and over most of that 20-year period, I was covering something called the Geek Beat, kind of unofficially, and that, among other things, included comic books, you know, Star Wars, eventually like Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, that sort of thing. And the shortest version of this story is that I became friends with a person named Joe Quesada, who was former editor-in-chief of Marvel, and then later the chief creative officer for Marvel. Basically, the faithful thing that brought me into comics was one year in 2016, I did a May the 4th, online story for the Daily News, and I interviewed this actor by the name of Paul Blake, who played Greedo, one of the actors who played Greedo, and we were joking about the whole Usha First controversy. He was making all these incredibly funny jokes about Greedo's myopic eyes and all this kind of stuff, and I left that interview thinking, like, oh my God, if there'd be something if we could tell the murder investigation into Greedo, but sort of an homage to Akira Kurosawa's famous movie Rashomon. And for those of you who are not really into classic Japanese cinema, no disrespect if you're not. But basically, it's sort of this, it's based on a novel, and it's this in feudal Japan, this murder, and the murder investigation has like four different versions of what happened, including the ghost of the victim, and they're all different. And so I thought it'd be funny to sort of do that homage. Long story short, I was at a Mets game with Joe, and I was like, hey, do you mind if I submit a spec script? He was not enthusiastic at all, but he said, sure, whatever. And if it was published, because I was still a reporter, I'd be upfront about it and like donate the money or whatever. I contacted Lucasfilm because I knew some people from the movie side, and then I ended up talking to Pablo Hidalgo about continuity. Sent him the script that I wrote, never written a script, a comic book script before, and I didn't hear anything for weeks. Went to Japan to visit my in-laws, and then the plane lands on September 7th, 2016. I get the email that changes my life with the subject line, F. Greedo, and basically the gist of that email is, never mind Greedo, you can actually write comics. That comic never got made, but it sort of ended up being my foot in the door. And to this day, it's a question whether it's a career change or a midlife crisis. But
that could be both.
Yeah, that's true. That's
probably is both.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. I studied journalism in college, so it was really cool to hear that you had made that transition or had that midlife crisis. I think that's such an awesome story. Writing Bounty Hunters and stuff, we are friends with the people who are part of Valance Nation. You know, I'm new to the comic book world. Hayden and Liv are kind of primarily the reason why I felt like I really wanted to get into them. But did the reception to the comics that you wrote surprise you? Were you expecting this type of like receival to them? Or,
you know, there have been periods of time, like usually when you go to conventions, and I don't go to that many, so there were times when I would go and there would be, you know, I'd have some excited fan or something. For the most part, you're like, you're working at, like, literally, this is what I look like when I'm typing on this keyboard. And like, I have no feedback or anything. It's like in a vacuum. And I think the first time I realized that these characters were actually meaning something to people was actually not in a positive way. Because in issue 4, it looked like I killed off this major character called Tonga, which Paolo Villanelli and I created.
Yeah.
And we were kind of flip about it because I knew she wasn't actually dead. So it was like, I think as I went along, people realized I kind of torture these characters if I actually don't have a high body count. But at that time, people didn't know, and there was like a lot of backlash. And in a good way, it was like, wow, they care. Because, I'm just kind of playing with cliffhangers and stuff like that. So, like, I didn't even think twice about it at the time. And so I think that was my first sense that, wow, we're resonating with some people. Right now they're angry at me. And I did a few things along the way that made people angry. Because, yeah, I'm a big believer in sort of putting these characters through a lot of trauma so they emerge on the other side in a better place.
Which, I read it. I know Lindsay might have read it as it was releasing, but reading it all in one go, I was so glad because there were some times where I was so nervous and I was like, I know I can go immediately to the next issue, but I'm still so nervous for this character. Balance, I know that Lindsay and I can both agree with this. I feel like he had such a beautiful ending. I like through his journey had such, like you said, trauma. You kind of put him through the gutter, Ethan. But he did emerge on the other side. And was that ending for him always the one that you had in mind, or were there kind of multiple that you were thinking about, or was this always the one that you wanted for him?
This is always the one I wanted for him. I wanted the last page to be him holding his hand out to the reader and to someone else. And I didn't know who that other person was though. I knew it was not going to be Yura, and there was a reason for that. Because I kind of felt like he treated her so shabbily in the previous, like Target Vader, and the idea that she would be just sitting around for years waiting for him. I didn't like that. Like I didn't visualize her that way, so I wanted her to move on, because he just wasn't ready to sort of accept himself. Like my whole vision when I was approached to do this series, they wanted Valance to be the point of view character, and the reason for that was he was a classic Marvel character that was first created in 1978, and so Marvel wanted to, much like with Aphra, where it's like their own character within the Star Wars, they wanted to sort of give him that spotlight, but at the same time, they wanted the supporting characters to be those sort of classic bounty hunters from Empire Strikes Back. So those were the sort of two directives that was going to be the sort of the whole framing of the book. When they approached me, they wanted it to be like, okay, he's going to be like the Punisher in space, or like this action hero, and I didn't really see that. Like what I liked about him, or my way in, was this idea that he was, catastrophically injured, and he's repaired on the outside, but not on the inside. And so, like, the whole arc, as long as we had, and I didn't know. I was naive. Like, we started, and I had all these threads that I assumed I'd eventually get to, but it could have been canceled after 5 issues, and then there would have been nothing. None of this would have happened. But that being said, like, I wanted him by the end to repair himself inside. It was kind of a very personal story for me, so that. I knew that's where I wanted it to go.
What I loved mostly about Valance, and then I'll let you ask the question next, Lindsay, was that even though he's kind of like made of all these hard parts on the inside, I love that he is soft on the inside. Like he definitely has, he. His heart is removed eventually, but I feel like he never loses that. So he doesn't need like the physical heart to have a heart, if that makes sense.
So, other than the pre-existing material, did you have anything to go off of for his personality and backstory, or was it something you got to write up for him throughout the journey? You were kind of explaining that just now, but were you given a lot of freedom to decide like what kind of man he was?
Yeah, I think I was. I mean, I used a lot of what's the word I'm looking for? Inspiration from in the original Marvel run, he was even crankier. He was he hated droids because he hated himself, basically, was the sort of the gist of the character. And he was after Luke, and then Luke sort of changed his mind, and then essentially Vader killed him. It's this whole arc. But I thought he was a little too unlikable in the original, just from my point of view. So I wanted him to feel like I liked the idea of him not seeing himself as human, but he's kind of the most human, one of the most human people in this book. So I like that about him. And I would, I basically, but the other thing I liked about him that I did take from places like Target Vader, in the original run is he's one of those few people that he will face Darth Vader, like he will rush in to fight Darth Vader and not be afraid. So obviously, whatever human parts he has, his self-preservation instinct isn't part of it. But I like that about him, and especially he just kind of also evolved a little bit as I wrote him, as I sort of saw him. But there was also because this is a version that was in canon, so all the early Marvel stuff I could use for inspiration, but I wasn't using it as like there was no guardrails, so I think I had a lot of room to play with it.
Yeah, so I suppose for some people who are familiar with your like the Legends version of him, they could see that reflected in this more canon version of him. But you were able to dive deeper and show a deeper personality, a deeper character with more time. You spent more time with him. We all spent more time with him than the originals. So I really liked that. And just kind of piggybacking off of this previous question, what was it like being able to write pre-existing characters in the terms of like Dengar and Bossk and Boba Fett? How did that What was it like to do that, and how did that make you feel?
Well, like, first of all, I'm of age where I was 7 years old when The Empire Strikes Back came out. So I had these characters on literally on my childhood bed sheets.
That
Like, I
was
had all the action figures, you know?
so cool to read about in your last note in
Oh, really?
42.
So
Sorry, go
this
ahead.
was pretty cool. And I Bossk, for whatever reason, I always had a fixation. I think it was because there was this TV show when I was really little called Land of the Lost. And they had these Sleestaks snacks that were like these reptilian villains that scared me as a kid. And he looked so much like them. So I think I gravitated towards his look. And sort of to write all of them, I ended up like really falling in love with Zekas in particular. So it was kind of, and at the same time, with the exception of Boba Fett, there really was a lot of to play with them without it interfering with anything that was like, Boba Fett, like we could only use a certain amount, right? And I think part of that was because Book of Boba Fett was being made and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I think we weren't sure what we could and couldn't do without, like, if Book of Boba Fett has flashbacks, we can't contradict that kind of thing. So
Exactly.
we could only use Boba Fett unlimited. So he was more like a force of nature that sort of blew in and blew out, like a hurricane. Whereas the other ones I could kind of go into deeper. And also Tasu Leech, who was not even from the original trilogy, but from the sequel trilogy, but to show a younger version of him. Obviously he wasn't going to die in Bounty Hunters because he has to show up in Force Awakens and then die. It was kind of, these were characters, like I had a different type of job than say Greg writing Darth Vader, who like we know where his arc goes, so it was such a challenge, and I think Greg did such a great job, or Charles, working with these characters that their arcs are so well known. So like Alyssa and I got to write the characters that we had a little bit more freedom, I think, to do that.
I think, though, there is a challenge, even in the fact that you have more freedom, though, because so many fans have a pre-existing idea of these characters, their own personal feelings about these characters. And I know for me personally, I really appreciated getting to know them more, getting to know Dengar more, getting to know Bossk more, Azekas and Forlom. Like, I always really liked them, but we didn't have like a lot of in. To me, I don't think we have a lot of like in-depth time with them. We don't get to hear them talk and act a lot. And so being able to experience them through these comics was so fun because I always like craved more about them. I thought they were so cool, especially, the classic shot in Empire Strikes Back where they're all lined up. I was like, those guys are so cool. And then we don't really see them again. And yeah, they've shown up in other things, but being able to just like look at the page and read more about them and see them interacting in all these different ways in the galaxy was really, really cool. And I think for people who, like I said, had pre-existing ideas and thoughts and feelings about these characters, I think you honored them very well with the amount of freedom that you had with them.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
It was also really knowing them on a more intimate level, on the point where it comes with like friendships and relationships, like how those work. Especially with Bossk and Valance, I think that was one of my favorite relationships throughout the run. And this was also pretty cool, but I noticed in the later issues, Bossk refers to the droids as clankers. And I remembered that he was in the Clone Wars, and I was like, that's such a good touch. But this kind of leads me to backtrack just a wee bit, but I'm sorry if I pronounce her name wrong. Is it Cadelia?
Cadelia, yeah.
Okay, Cadelia. So,
I mean, there's no wrong answer since it's not like a character, but I pronounce her Cadelia.
Okay, so I loved her. I know we only got her for, I don't want to say a short amount of time, but I loved her relationship with Valance, or like the would be, but was she's somebody you created, or was she already kind of
No, Paolo and I created
okay.
with the idea that that whole storyline of these two warring syndicates would be a longer storyline, but two things happened. Number one, Grogu. So we were talking about it, and we're like, I think we're getting a little too close to The Mandalorian, and that was even before Bad Batch. Where,
Yeah.
with Omega's, we don't want to necessarily look like we're. Because they're doing it so well, we don't want to tread on the same territory. We want to do something fresh and such. So, also, I kind of felt more and more like Valance is really not suited to be a
Yes.
father. Like, he could barely take care of himself. I think, and then what happened was at the same time, the second thing was War of the Bounty Hunters was shaping up. And we were thinking, because we knew, Charles had this master plan for basically a trilogy of events, Crimson Dawn in Empire and following. So we're like, if Kira is starting a war in the underworld, like this would be an interesting way that we can, get Cadelia in. And the whole great thing about these crossovers is like we were such a tight-knit unit, and we were on Zooms every Wednesday and like collaborating and everything. And Charles, these crossovers were, his great visions. And at the same time, he'd constantly talk to us about like, hey, what can we do with your characters to get them? And so, we were like, can you take Cadelia and put that into that larger storyline? And he ended up just organically, it ended up being like this beautiful thing where Kira saves one person. And I almost get teary thinking about it because it's like Kira basically was so close to winning and just has this epic defeat, but she saved one person. So it ended up, I think her. Cadelia's story is great, and she sort of went from Bounty Hunters to, the event series, and then, we wanted to have her back for the last issue.
So you actually already nearly touched on all of it, but I'm so interested to know that collaboration process. You said you guys met on Zoom. Specifically, I suppose, with the artists, Paolo is an amazing artist. All of his work just felt so cinematic on pages. I've never experienced anything like that. But what do you just write the script, hand it over, and then you get something back? Or is it kind of like you're sitting with each other and you're going off of it, going off of each other? Or what is that like?
So for the most part, like a typical comic script, especially as it's gone so international, is almost entirely done by email. And so, think of it like an assembly line. Like the editor will approach the writer and be like, "Hey, I would like to do a 4-issue series, a 5-issue series, whatever, for this character. Do you have ideas?" You send in a pitch. They come back to you. They approve it. You start to write a script. It's a back and forth with the editor. And once it's ready, it goes to the artist. The artist does layouts, it's a back and forth, and then but it's like an assembly line that goes colorist letter. So even though like by email you're sounding off or whatever, but part of it is too, like the schedules of monthly comics nowadays, it's very hard for one artist to stay on the series for a long period of time. That's why you see so much of a change in art teams, and often they'll be like, oh, this person's leaving for this arc and coming back because we're kind of, because of shipping things, whatever, like we're working on this weird schedule, and the writers are have to be a little faster, and the artists need at least a month. So it's a long way of saying it's very hard to be, in this day and age to have that collaboration. But because Paolo and I, we had a 31 issues over 4 years together, we could go a little deeper. And so what I would do is, usually the artist just gets the script, but I would Skype with him. We'd become pretty good friends, and I would say, oh, like, here's some things I'm thinking about. And I would ask him, like, what character is your favorite character to draw? And so he would say Darth Vader. And so that's why we had like a kind of worked in that whole Vader arc, and another credit to Charles Soule was I used to, like, in my scripts, really put panel descriptions on everything. I have a bunch of action figures that of characters that I write just as trophies, basically. But I would use them to try to figure out, like, okay, the person punches with his right hand, and like the, trying to, and I'm trying to describe it because I thought I was helping the artist. And then I read Charles' amazing script for War of the Bounty Hunters Alpha, which was like this Boba Fett storyline where he's like in an arena and all this kind of stuff. And I saw that he basically lets the artist, like, for action scenes, right? They'll say, okay, for these 2 pages, there's going to be an epic fight. Like, these three things have to happen, and by the end, this has to happen. But you go to town, and and I realized, like, oh my God, that's the way to do it. So I would do it with Paolo, and that's, I think, where maybe like the sixth issue, I think, is where we started with that. And I just think, like, the action scenes feel so much more cinematic and like this kinetic energy, this movement. And so I feel like letting him be the expert on the visual, it's like having an action choreographer in an action movie, right? Like, you don't want the director to say, okay, Jackie Chan, let Jackie Chan be Jackie Chan because he's going to do it better than whatever you're, it's a terrible analogy, but whatever.
That's perfect.
But yeah, so I think because we had so much time together, we could sort of adapt and really work together. So it was something special. I want to work with him again. Marvel sort of wanted, and he kind of wanted to eventually, because he had been on Star Wars for like 5 years or something like that, and 6 years. And as an artist, you don't want to get typecast. So like he was like, I think I need to shift to superheroes at some point. But he stayed like a year longer than his original plan. So he was having fun.
It definitely seemed like it. I think the fight scenes were probably some of my favorite parts of the issues. They just felt so real. It felt like I was watching a movie.
That's the magic of Paolo.
Yeah.
And also, by the way, this is to take nothing away from the amazing artists, and there's too many to name check off the top of my head, but like W. Tinto did like 5 issues, and Miracle did the probably one of my favorite issues, the one where it's Zuckuss's backstory. And
That one was good.
yeah, so we had an embarrassment of riches for artists, as well as I mean, the regular colorist and Travis the letterer. So this is like I was gifted with a team that made me look infinitely better as a writer. So
So you were a guest on our solo panel. I still to this day talk about it, but I wanted to ask this because of the solo panel. I know that Baylor, we're on a first name basis with him now, was an Imperial cadet. He wasn't necessarily named right till like issue 3 or 4, I think. But when was it decided that Valance and Han would be buddies, or that their like backstories would kind of coincide?
That kid was before me. That was at Solo. So they knew each other, and we knew that he felt a debt, from Solo saves from Han saving his life. So that was always in the back of my mind. And I kind of feel like the way I envisioned, because he's kind of a little bit of a jerk, but I feel like that he as a younger, before he was like injured and all that, and before he, realized the Empire didn't care about him. I feel like it was one type of person. People change over time and experience this, like, temper you like a tempering steel, like pressure, or whatever. It makes you my metaphors, I'm sure. So I felt like he probably had a connection. And then actually the first Valance story that I wrote was a 10-pager in Empire Ascendant. Because we were basically teasing. The four main books in the series were essentially teasing what was to come when it started. And so I had that they have this weird relationship where, because it's set before Bounty Hunters, right? It's set before Empire. And so they were like, it was a little uneasy. So I kind of feel like they were friends, but there was this weirdness between them, And I think, like, once he realized his friend was in trouble, that also actually really fed into how I wanted to end the book. Like, Because like basically what happens is like when the decision is made to end the book, it's almost always like where the trade would end. So the natural point to end this would have been 41, right? Because like the whole Dark Droids arc. And what they ended up doing, what I asked for was like, I need to tie up a lot because I feel like, and so they not only gave me the extra issue, they gave me a 30-page issue. They allowed me to bring back Paolo for the, for that coda, for that like 8-page coda. I call it the Return of the King, you know, where at the end of the Return of the King, there's like another half hour of singing and, you know, king crowning and going back to the Shire and all this kind of stuff. So that was that kind of thing. So anyway, I knew I wanted to address the fact because he just didn't seem like the kind of person to be like, oh, well, I tried to save Han, but I'm done. You know, like it just didn't seem like that was him. So either he had to try and fail and get killed, or he had to do something that advanced the plan to save Han, and that he would step aside if he thought like he's helping the rebellion and he's going to leave it to them. So we set up in was it, I think issue 12 or wherever Chewbacca basically pounded him into the dirt. That he said like, you know, he said something to the effect of like, if you need me, I'll be there kind of thing. And so it's implied that Chewbacca reached out to him, or through Chewbacca that he was reached out to, and then he would. There were all these things that we could tie up, not only for bounty hunters, but for like the Yoda series. Mark Guggenheim introduced the Mega Droid, and you know, in Han and Chewie, they had this neural core that turned out to be Ajax's. But like, why was Jabba looking for it? So all these pieces kind of naturally fit together, and we gave Fallon a rare win, so like he would do something, you know, that sort of. So secretly, he helps sort of the whole rebel plan that much more.
That was so satisfying to read, especially after all like the trials and tribulations of the entire run, and to kind of have this sort of triumphant moment at the end where like his actions, his and his friend's actions really did influence, you know, everything that happens in Return of the Jedi. And it just felt so right, and it felt so good to read about. And talking about the ending of the comic run, I just wanted to ask, like, this is kind of a big question. It might take a second to think about, but if there is a lesson to be derived from the story in Bounty Hunters, what would that lesson be? Like, what is that lesson?
I mean, I think the central theme, and I mentioned this before, is like overcoming trauma. I was going through some stuff as, you know, kind of came out with a Haunted Girl right when I started writing this. And so the idea of these characters kind of trying and failing and then trying again and failing and then eventually succeeding and overcoming, you know, the sort of, to me, the co-lead of this series was Tonga, and her arc was going to be surviving. You know, she was a survivor basically, and so she had this PTSD from this horrific attack that almost killed her. And I knew, you know, I didn't know where it was going to slot in, but if I had the chance, I wanted her to face Boba Fett again and have this thing where she's just kind of cowering at first because she's afraid. It's like the fear is so intense that it's like crippling her, and then the rest of the team gets wiped out basically by Boba Fett, just methodically kind of defeats everybody. And if she doesn't act in that moment, they're all gonna die. And so like she finds the courage and she's the one to take him now. So that, I think it was 35, like that was a beat that was going to be towards the end originally, but then like there was dark droids, and so like it ended up getting shuffled a bit. But that was like that, you know, was where I wanted her arc to go, among other things. So like she was a complicated character because like there were two sort of threads. That was that, and there was also like she is first is like out for revenge for her brother, right? And so she's living this like cycle of vengeance that like leads to just more cycle of violence that leads to more violence kind of thing. So like if you look at 4 and the bottom of one page, her brother is killed by Boba Fett, which is by accident, but it was by Boba Fett. And then on the next page, she's shot in the exact same way by Boba Fett. So it's like she followed this path that was going to lead to her destruction. And then from there she changes and she realizes I've got to live for something else besides revenge. And so she ends up deciding like I'm going to try to save Cordelia. And then she fails there. And then she's like, I'm going to try to save my crew. The crew, you know, she loses the crew basically through this betrayal. And then it's like, I'm going to try to save Valance. And she does save Valance. And so like she that's like her arc is like trying and failing, and then succeeding. And so like I wanted to show that like it's okay to fail. It's like it's okay to without losing the whole space opera of it. Like no one wants to
Yeah.
be like, oh my God, it's the sermon of the month, but I did want to have those themes of overcoming PTSD, of not being afraid to fail, and eventually, you keep trying and eventually you're going to succeed. And so that was all like kind of worked out. Things change as you're writing the story
Yeah.
and characters kind of write themselves in a way, but I think we stuck to that pretty tightly.
I'd have to agree, as just as the reader, and having kind of dipped in and out of the series as it was written throughout the years. Like I would, I'd read them and then I would go away from it a bit and come back and have some to catch up on. And so it was kind of intermittent, and I refreshed myself before we had this interview on everything that happened. Yeah, I felt the same sense of the characters just kept persevering through everything. They would just persevere, and no matter what was happening, they would just keep going. And obviously, some of them went through some really rough times, and they'd need help from other characters to remind them of what they needed to be doing, or like that they should just keep going. And I think also, like from my perspective, I felt it was very much, even though none of these characters were like really family, the fact that they kept coming back together and, sometimes helping each other, sometimes it wasn't so much, but like they just kept coming back together because of the connections that they had with each other. And I thought that was really beautiful, that especially in the end, like to see that all kind of culminate, no matter what had happened earlier in the series, it was just really beautiful.
Thank you. I mean, that was my hope is, I didn't want these characters to just be like a bunch of just badasses that are there was no connection between them. I kind of wanted some of them at least to, even Bossk kind of felt it for a little while, but he's Trandoshan and that's in their nature. Like they eat their own siblings and as a rite of passage. So like, of course he's eventually going to betray the people for like a better deal, like. And I think he felt bad about it, but it's just that's his nature.
I was also looking up a quote from Skyr in the High Republic, and it reminded me of Tonga's story, where he said, "We strive, we repeat, we succeed." And that's what I was kind of thinking about throughout, Bounty Hunters, because like you said, like it's okay to fail and it's okay to keep trying, and I think that that's what made these characters feel very easy to resonate with and to connect with, was because they weren't like, they're not perfect people, and a lot of the times, like in a larger world in Star Wars, like a lot of these people are heroes, and they do succeed very easily. But I think my favorite part of this story was the lack of succeeding, because it feels so human. But leading off of that, we have three questions, two really great ones, actually, as I'm reading them back. But the first one is from Liv, so Lady Kira, and
Is
she
it going to
said,
be how dare you? Is that the question?
No, I was expecting that, but when I read it, she does have a little quote for you here, or a little comment. She said, "If you had to choose one character from Bounty Hunters, besides Valance, let him live in peace, to write another series about, who would it be?"
Oh my God, that's so tough. I mean, the obvious one for me would be Tonga and Lorcha. Just they're like our babies. I liked, I love writing them. I kind of feel that between where we left them and their appearance, or well, Tonga's appearance in Halcyon Legacy. She mentions that Lorcha's, on the ship or whatever. So we know that they've been active for, 5 or 6 years after this. I kind of feel like that would be a natural one, but in terms of like the more famous, I guess, or the longer, character's been around longer. I really, really enjoyed writing. God, it's so hard to choose. I kind of feel like there's a lot of room to write a Tasu Leech mini or something because he's still, he still has adventures. I don't know if that'd be dramatic to for him to carry a book. I kind of feel like Bossk is the safest one. But yeah, they thought we left it so that all these characters, like you could, whoever takes the baton next can like write another Bounty Hunters where it's now it's the team with Boskin and Deathstick and those guys and where they could do Zuckuss and 4LOM and where Tonga and Losha, like they're where Valance, and Hayden. So like they're all sort of available. So any number of directions. But yeah, for me, I guess Tonga and Losha would be my first choice. In fact, I was close to having to choose because we were going to split the book. Valance is literally torn out of the book in issue 17. The plan was for like a mini series or something where he would be sort of running with his own Imperial team, like not by choice. So then what happened was the paper shortage. I don't want people to forget, but there was like this huge paper shortage. This was a supply chain crisis. It was like in 2020 or 2021, 2021. And so we ended up having to scrap that plan, and he ends up in Vader for a while, in the Vader book for a while. But originally, he was going to be running around kind of like 18 and 19. And it wasn't a given that I was going to get to do both. If I had to choose, I was going to choose Tonga and Losha and their crew, like the crew of Bounty Hunters. So it would have stayed Bounty Hunters, and then it would have been like Valance and Dark Squadron or something like that.
Oh.
So yeah, I don't know. That would have been. So I would have had that choice, I guess, at that time. My choice would have been to do both, but I don't know. Anyway, in an alternate reality, that's what happened. But there was
That's
both.
so in that's so interesting, because I kind of, as you're explaining it, I kind of, looking back and thinking about those issues, you kind of see that, and it's cool to get your insight on, the other side, like the reality of it. That's really cool.
Yeah, because at that time, if people remember, there were skip months for every Marvel comic, basically. And that was because it's like, okay, we have a fixed amount of paper, so we can print like X number per week. And so it was like, I don't even know how they did it. It was like this math problem where they had to calculate, down to the, it was very, it was a tough time.
Yeah, I imagine. Oh my gosh.
Was it, speaking of Imperials, was it fun writing Inferno Squad?
Oh my God, it was. Yeah, I would kill to do more with them. I got to talk to Matt Dyer, I think Dwyer. Sorry, I'm Mitch Gangano. But anyway, so he was the one of the co-writers, and so he helped. I kind of showed him what I was thinking. And, I'd never met him before, and he was just so happy to see his babies in comic book form. But I got to write them. I got to write the Knights of Ren, and in each case, like I wanted them to beat the crap out of our heroes, but our heroes do a pretty good showing, all things considered. So yeah, so that was kind of important. And at that point, I also knew that I want where I wanted to go with the whole memory loss storyline. And so it was a good way, Lieutenant Hayden's like kind of pulling the strings to save him, but by doing so, like kind of setting it up so that his memories erased because he had witnessed the Death Star plans and not known it, but his processor records everything. Somewhere out there, he had a copy of the Death Star schematics because he wandered in too early, and so they weren't going to let him just go with that in case he brought it to the rebels. So it became this, once one domino fell, it just sort of carried. And I was like, that's the perfect, Imperial sort of elite squad to just take, to basically get it done. And it's kind of a really fun guest star. It's kind of like sweeps week in old network TV. I don't know if you know what that is, but like on network television, there would be certain weeks where for advertising sake, they would have like Bruce Willis on Friends or whatever. Like they'd have these big things and they'd go big because of those were the most important week for ad buys or whatever. So it was kind of like that bizarre sweep, the big cameo.
I it was great. I loved it. Anything with Eden Verso is pretty cool.
Oh, she's so fantastic.
She really is. So this
And I
next
loved fighting Tonga, fighting her. And again, she was going to lose. But I wanted it to be like, okay, well, she held her own, was pretty good.
Yeah. So this next question is from Jaina. So Rogue Oneism. What were the hardest parts of the writing process for Bounty Hunters, and what did you do to work through these parts?
Good question. You know, anytime you're writing, not only on deadline, but like I think coordinating the crossovers could be hard because you're not always working on the same pace. You know, like as an example, we had to connect with War of the Bounty Hunters, where Valance is with, ends up going off with Boba Fett. And, you know, we kind of were ahead of where the artist on the event series was. So we was like, how do we draw this so that it's like where he is in relation to everyone else and everything? And it was such a technical thing, but it would, you know, you would run into these roadblocks because it's like, we have to know what's happening and they're not ready yet, but we have to finish ours. And so it was all like that kind of thing was tough, but I think that's more of a technical challenge than an emotional one. I think there were some characters that, you know, I think like writing Vakara to a place where the readers would feel for her after we really started as like a very like homicidal villain, and like could she be redeemed in people's eyes, especially after killing the Nexu, which was probably our highest profile kill besides maybe Nakano Lash. And I keep throwing Paolo under the bus for this, but I do joke that it's all Paolo's fault. Most of the time it's really my fault, but that one was his fault because he just got tired of drawing the Nexus. He's like, can we just kill this off? So I was like, okay. And then maybe we'll make it so that it's like really impactful for both Lucia and for Vakara in separate ways. So then I was like, okay, well, maybe she had trauma. Vakara struck me as the kind of person who hates people but loves animals. So like that was my way in, like how traumatized she would be from having, you know, she did it to save her own life, right? But she didn't want to. And so like that started this whole chain reaction with her backstory. But I like, she was a character that I fell increasingly in love with, and hats off to Alyssa because they put Vakara in Bounty and Aphra after their first appearance in the first arc. And I realized, oh yeah, Vakara is not, it's originally Vakara was like, okay, I just need a villain here for this thing. And I felt like I first saw the potential when Alyssa wrote her. So when they sort of reimagined Vakara as more of a kind of fun, you know, a villain with a little bit of a sense of humor, I think, more than I did. And I was like, okay, now I kind of see. So it was like, just like, I credit Alyssa as a co-creator along with Paolo and myself. It's like, yeah, we first had a Vakara in Bounty Hunters, but I think Alyssa, like, they did such a great job at starting to develop Vakara, and so that became, like, yeah, so long-winded way of saying that making her likable was a challenge, potentially. And I'm very grateful that people could digest that, you know.
I think one of my favorite panels is all of the Tuca cats coming out with the bombs or the thermal detonators. I think that's one of my favorites. I mean, the transition with that, when you find out that, you know, she has that trauma about like having to kill the Tuca as a child and then, you know, killing the Nexu, I think that was a great way to get like the audience or like the readers to feel something, because I feel like you have to be pretty heartless to dislike animals. I ended up like loving her. I thought that she was so fun, and the moment where her arms are around both Tonga and her wife, yeah. I was like, this is so great. Like, I could read a whole story about all of them. But our last question, is from Emily. And I think this is in reference to when you went onto the Kessel Run Relay podcast, but she said, Jin and Saw comic when?
Oh. I have no updates on that. I keep plugging away. The only thing I can confirm is Django, but that's obviously old news now. So
I was actually talking to Emily about this because I had her submit this question. Well, this was her question, not mine. And it made me remember. So you've seen Andor, I'm sure.
Yes.
Sure. It was so good. But I think that you would be the perfect writer for like a Melshi comic.
Oh God, I would love that. Yeah.
It would be so cool.
The problem, just from like being able to do that kind of thing, is with a show that's in motion, you know, that's currently, you can't really do anything because like those characters are, you know, it's not even like the story group or whatever like knows exactly everything that's going to happen, so you can't like it's almost like a hot mic or something. I don't know, it's a terrible analogy, but like it's where you can't, you know, it's like after it ends, if you know like this is where it just, the great thing about Star Wars comics is they matter, right? Like it's not just a, and I love licensed comics, so I'm not disparaging any other franchises. What I'm saying is like these comics are part of the official story, so like things that happen, so like the drawback, if there is any drawback, and I don't think there is, it's just like you can't necessarily, like we couldn't write a Mandalorian comic that wasn't an adaptation of the Mandalorian because those adventures are still happening. And so, you know, even something like a flashback might impact if you write a prequel, you know. So I think that's what was one of the great things about this generation of Star Wars comics, was because we could set ourselves in that year between Empire and Return. Like, okay, we know where the big stuff is going to have to be in Return, but there is, we can play in that year without messing anything up, you know. Whereas like if we were going into, you know, like the same time period as Bad Batch, we'd have to be very careful about using Bad Batch characters because it's like, as an example, or Mandalorian, or you know. So I felt like we were really lucky to have this period to ourselves, that we're not in danger of, because like the worst thing you can do is mess up the continuity, you know.
Yeah, so it's like, you have to wait till that person, you have to wait till they're done speaking before you can speak into it. So it's like we have to wait till Andor is over before any like extrapolation off of the story that's set in stone can happen. So it's like we'll wait till season two is over because that's the last season, and then we might, everyone might see some more Andor content based
I
off
think
of
so.
it
I
after
think
it's
so.
all over. Like that would be how it would happen if it happens. I see. Cool.
And it's not like a business decision or something. It's just like you
Yeah.
have to, like right now, Andor is doing it so well. Like, why would we want to muddy that,
Yeah.
you know? And it's
Yeah.
such a big galaxy. There's so many. You look at the High Republic, no one knew about that end of the timeline at all. And there is this rich, amazing, unique, original, you know, within the span of what, 2 years, you care about these characters that didn't exist before. Like, you know what I mean? And
Yeah.
that's beautiful. Like, it doesn't always have to be us hanging like right in this period, or you were lucky to hang in that period. So.
Yeah. Do you, on the topic of High Republic, do you think that you would ever want to write for that era or?
You know, I'm lucky that I wrote one issue of the Halcyon Legacy that actually had my favorite, Buriaga, my favorite character, or one of my favorite characters. But the thing is, they're doing it so well, and everything is so cool. Like, I don't know that I could just jump on. Certainly, if asked, I would be happy to. But I think, like, the Luminous crew, you know, and I'm so happy for Alyssa. Like, I haven't read the book yet, I have it. But for her and DJ to for Daniel to you know, so I'm living vicariously through them. Yeah, so yeah, I'm happy as a fan to just get to read all the stuff. I'm a little behind. I'm still in phase two, but
No, I just finished phase two and I'm just starting phase one because I wanted to read it like in your
chronologically,
yeah.
it was
And so
the machete cut.
I personally just finished phase two and I just started Light of the Jedi. I'm like almost halfway through, I think, at this point. But it's so cool because Savi here, she started phase one, she finished phase one, now she's starting phase two, so we're kind of like she just did, so we're like waving as we pass each other. I'm going into her, she already knows what happens in phase one, I don't, so we're
You're
like
all
waving.
in store for a lot of trauma.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. Bounty Hunters is like a rated G Bambi issue. Although Bambi's a bad example
Honestly.
because, like, the mom dies and the father dies. But, like, it's like a rated G, you know, Disney movie compared to, like, like the Jedi serial killers that are like Charles and Claudia.
I
Claudia
Yeah.
Gray came for our throats.
And she warned me. She's like, the first like 80 pages of Light of the Jedi, you're really in for it. And I was like, what? And I finished them and I was like, you were not wrong.
Yeah.
You were not wrong at all.
Sorry,
Go
Lindsay,
ahead.
go ahead.
Go ahead.
We get pretty excited. Jacob Busch was like, "You have a big storm coming," when I first started, and I needed to pass that information on to Linz, because there was like some moments where when I was reading The Fallen Star, and I was like, I feel like I needed like a wellness check.
Well,
Obviously, that's your reaction though.
and just piggybacking off of what we were kind of touching on with the continuity, I knew going into phase one that I would see stuff that I was familiar with in phase two, and immediately I did, and I was like, oh my gosh, I see the connections now, and I know that Savi here will be seeing the same things as she's starting phase two, and I just think they did a really beautiful job of making sure that everything meshed well. You know,
Yeah.
having written phase one and then going back in time for phase two, I thought it was really cool. So I suddenly we're talking about the High Republic, but
It's
yeah,
always fun.
I love it. I love it. So
And the great thing with the High Republic is that was all just, it's like like in the old days, it'd be like a map and it'd be like a gray area on the edges because no one ever went
wild
past that.
space.
Yeah, and so this exactly, and so like this is filling in some of that gray area in the timeline that we didn't know about, within the Disney era, like obviously like Knights of Old Republic or whatever, but like this is so cool to sort of see. But I gotta say, Yoda is, I don't know, he's the greatest leader of the
Speaking,
Jedi. He's kind of, a lot has happened on his watch.
I was thinking that during Midnight Horizon, and I won't go into it because
Yeah, you
obviously
don't need
Linz
to.
hasn't read it. But yeah, no, I was thinking that during the High Republic Adventures and during Midnight Horizon, I was like, it's kind of a lot of stuff that's gone over right over his head. Though I did love Midwife Yoda. I won't like go further into it, but I don't know if you've read that part, Ethan, but
Yes.
okay, I was giggling. I was listening to an audiobook walking home, and that whole part was happening. And I was like, I feel like people think I'm crazy for laughing in public at this. But yeah, no,
We need more laughter in public, so.
yeah, for sure. The High Republic's such a beautiful era. And then there's the 150 years between phase two and one. So it's like now there's another gray area.
Yeah,
Hoping they
we'll see where
fill
it goes. But yeah, I'm happy to watch as a fan. But
it.
certainly if they ever needed another comic here or there, I'd be an honor.
Yeah. Well, we have one last question that we ask all of our guests, so I'll let Linz ask it.
So, if you could shadow any Star Wars character for a day, as just like their friend, their assistant, just somebody who is in their circle for a day, who would it be?
That is a very good question.
Why? And why, yes.
That is a very good question. My natural inclination is to say, like, one of my favorite characters, like Jyn Erso or Mace Windu or like Wedge Antilles. But I think, and I know this feels like a plug or something, I've really come to like writing Jango, and specifically in this period of time before Phantom Menace, because I kind of feel like he's a less haunted version of Boba Fett. And so he is more of a kind of fun thing. So it'd be kind of fun to fly in that fire spray alongside. I think that era of hanging out with Jango, I could do that for a day. I'd probably end up dead. Like stray gunfire or stray blaster fire or something. It'd be fun, I think. Or Mythic, yeah. I mean, I don't know if that, yeah, I think that would, I don't know that I'd want to hang out with Jedi, though, to be honest. It seems to kind of be a downer.
Yeah, that's true. I say as I wipe my answer away, think of a new one.
Jyn Erso would be another one, but obviously pre the events of Rogue One.
Yeah.
Like while she was, sort of before she got arrested,
Have you read Rebel Rising?
Yes.
Yeah, that period would be so fun where she's traveling.
Yeah.
That's a good answer.
Oh, wait a minute. I think I would have to go with Dr. Aphra, actually, because that would be the most fun. I'd
Yeah.
probably survive. if I was hanging out specifically with like Afra and her media crew, because like I feel like probably she has that luck that yeah. I don't know,
That's
so
a
many
fun.
choices. So many choices.
There's a lot of characters.
Yeah. Or Hondo. Maybe Hondo. Like Hondo would be pretty fun.
Yes, that is my man. We love him.
So fun fact, I was pitching to have Hondo in the role that ultimately went to Dengar, where he'd be like wandering around, but I couldn't get him because I think he was somewhere else in the timeline at the time. So then I
It's
was like,
okay. It's okay. I'm just glad that you thought of him because I miss him. I need him back in some way soon. So I'm just glad you thought of him.
can you imagine the buddy comedy with like Fallon and Hondo having to go
Oh
around
my
every single
gosh. Or Hondo and Pele Motto from I feel like they would get along. I love Hondo. But
God, there's so many good choices. So many choices.
Hondo and Valance is not difficult to picture, but I can only imagine that poor Valance's patience would be worn pretty thin.
The thing with Valance is like he's hard to write if he's just going around by himself. Like at first then he had a droid, then eventually he had Cadelia, and then he had Dengar, and then he then he was for a while running around with the Empire, and then he was part of the crew. And the reason is like he's just not somebody who's going to talk a lot, right? He's an in Oh, not quite as bad as Vader in that way, but like he isn't going to have a lot of exposition. So you need somebody who's going to slightly piss him off or whatever to draw out him talking, right? Like that's the thing about writing him. Dengar is the perfect person to piss someone off enough, excuse my French on this, where he's going to push the right buttons so that Balance is going to talk because he's angry. So that was kind of that's kind of what I needed, and I thought either Hondo or Dengar could have done
I love while we had it, Dengar and Valance's relationship. I would send pictures of the panels to Linz, and I'd be like, "These two are crazy." The part where they're on the transport together, they'll be there for like 2 days. I think
Oh, yeah.
that's one of my favorite parts because it kind of leads into how Valance said he wouldn't betray him, or that they were like he felt like a friendship between them. It just proves like that softness that he has, that like familial feelings that
I
he
was a
can't deny.
little tough for him to sort of abandon Dengar, but I think he would, at that point was like, it's for the good of.
He was
I
like,
also
Dengar
wanted
will be
this.
fine. The
I also wanted this fight where Dengar is this tiny little knife
knife.
and this giant creature, and
And
he's
then
looking at the knife.
the exaggeration in the later issues where he was
Yeah.
like a very small knife. Who would you shadow, Lens?
Oh gosh. Well, I think I don't remember if I'd said this before, but we were talking about with the High Republic, and we were talking about Yoda, and it just made me think about Yaddle again, how she is in phase two because she's in there. She made me laugh so hard, and I was like, I would love to hang out with her because she's not a very conventional Jedi to me. She definitely has a lot of Jedi, traits, but just the way that she goes about things, I was like, I would love to like hang out with her. I feel like we would have a lot of fun. So I'm gonna say
Yeah,
Yaddle.
that's a good one. How
That's
about
okay.
you?
I was thinking Orla after she becomes a Wayseeker, and obviously before the events of the Fallen Star. But I one of my favorite parts of her storyline is when she was teaching Elzar. Like a lot of the quotes and a lot of the teachings that she gave him were, and even when she's talking to Stellan, I feel like she is so wise. And her friendship with Komak is so real and I suppose intimate in a way, like in a very like not in a romantic way, obviously, but I loved her. I thought I love her. I think that she's a really wonderful person and he should be fun to hang out with. She teases a lot.
Both are good answers. I was wishy-washy.
No, there's just so much to choose from.
There's a lot. Some characters, I'm like, I don't know if I would get along with them.
I chose Hondo in the past. I chose Hondo in the past, so like I get it.
Jin was one of mine too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Well, I think
So I'm
we.
just giving you like 4 episodes worth.
Oh, this
Yeah.
is amazing.
This is perfect. This was so fun, Ethan. Thank you so much for coming on to
My
our
pleasure.
show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Where can
Yeah.
we, where can our listeners find you on social media?
For the time being, I'm on Twitter slash X, but I tell you every day it's like it is a feat of endurance to stay. But I'm also on Blue Sky. I think I'm either Ethan.Sachs or EthanJSachs on everything, pretty much Instagram. So yeah, you can find me there. I am on Facebook, but that's sort of like a private, just for my family that's even older than I am to like take their information. So I'm not really like on there in any kind of professional capacity. Yeah. I need to be on social media less right now, I think, for mental health purposes.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy talking to fans and teasing them a little bit with like cryptic, threats at balance and things like that. Once in a while I would
We've
predict
seen
real
that.
things. Yeah. I put in real things that were gonna happen. Like I said, oh, like in 31 he's gonna get shot in the face and fall. But I said that like a year before it happened. And then I also said, wouldn't it be amazing if only in issue 42 everyone has a happy ending, right? And of course, no one believes that because they're used to, torture and mayhem and all this kind of stuff. So I put little things like that in from time to time. So it's kind of fun.
I was doing my best to avoid spoilers for Bounty Hunters because I
Oh,
wanted
sorry.
to. No, I read the whole thing, but when it was coming out, I would like go pretty quickly past all of like the cryptic tweets and stuff. My favorite was reading like Hayden and Liv being so worried that Balance is going to die. And I was like worried for them. I was like, man, is Ethan gonna kill him?
Well, I had such a reputation for being this like awful. I mean, basically Nakano Lash, and who was sort of a major character, kind of more in flashbacks than anything else, and Anexu, which was not even like, person per se.
Yeah.
So like that was it, really, of the major character. I think sure a lot of minor characters died horribly, but not the major ones. So, but I would definitely play it up.
Which is awesome. Yes, as an Andor fan, like it's really nerve-wracking not knowing like a lot of these characters are not in Rogue One.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, what is their ending? Like we don't get any cryptic tweets, we just get
And
silence.
we already know that all the characters that go into Rogue One are most of them are dying anyway. So it's like,
Yeah.
please leave us a couple characters alive by the end of this so
I
we can hang
know,
on.
like that's why I wanted. That's like one of the reasons I really wanted to do Jyn Erso, is very much like Andor. Like it's just she might be my favorite character in the entire franchise. What I love about her is she went through this horrible thing as a child, was raised by essentially like a revolutionary, right? In this, you can you see a little bit of it in Rebel Rising, but like this life of constantly hiding and this sort of violent existence, yet she maintained her goodness like throughout the whole thing until the day she died. And like I love that about her so much. It's like she could have been hard and she could have been terrible, and she's clearly cynical, and but she is her father and mother's daughter. She never lost it, and I love that about her. Yes, but so there are so many characters, like all those major characters, like you want to see more of, and I'm sure there will be. I'm sure the 10th anniversary is coming up next year.
Yeah, oh my goodness. And it's a Star Wars celebration next year as well. So
In Japan, yeah.
yeah. Do you think you'll go?
I'm planning on it. I mean, my wife is Japanese, my in-laws are there, so I don't need a hotel.
Yeah,
So I'm planning on it.
my fiance is Japanese and his family is there
Nice.
too, so
So that's great. Because let me tell you something. If you are planning on staying, the one drawback to where they're holding it is the hotels in the immediate area are like ridiculously expensive. Like I'm not sure George Lucas can afford to stay there for a few nights, like that kind of expense.
Wow.
Well, not literally, but I'll say yeah. So anyway, so like I having a place to stay, the only drawback is like I'm gonna have to go through those crowded like subway lines to get there. But a small price to pay.
And it's in Tokyo, right? Okay.
It's yeah, kind of on the outskirts, but yeah, it's
Okay.
very close to Tokyo Disney.
Oh, perfect.
Perfect.
which
That's
I'm sure
perfect.
is not a coincidence.
Yeah. I'm excited. Lindsay and I are thinking about going, so hopefully we'll see you there.
I will just say this as somebody who is far older than you two. Like there is something, and I know like money is what it is. It's hard, you know, you a lot of things, and there's limited money. There is something about experiential, you know, having experiences, and like I kind of feel like that one is going to be, you know, just like London was really special. Like I think that one is going to be special just because it's a wonderful country. Like it's just, have you been there yet or?
I haven't been, he's been, but I'm really excited. I'm
Yeah.
trying to bring my side of the family so they could see it.
Yeah,
I'm
it's just.
hoping, sorry.
No, go ahead.
My younger brother, he was over there recently for months and he said that he really loved it, and I know that I could get some advice from him about it. And then my other brother, he lives in Hawaii. So I've talked to him about like, hey, I'll just like go to Hawaii, we'll buddy up, and then we'll both go together. So I'm hoping something like that can work out
That
for
sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
I know. I got in a pre-game with
Hawaii.
like
But
tailgating before the Super Bowl.
yeah, I'm like, well, I'm probably gonna be stopping there anyway. I'll pick you up and we'll go.
Yeah. Lindsay and I are both on the West Coast, so I'm in Seattle and she's in I'm a doxed you.
No, it's okay.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm in Idaho.
Okay.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll see you there. That'd be cool. Maybe we can do another panel together.
Yeah,
That'd be
I'll
fun.
probably have plenty of time because we'll be on like two official panels, and that's it. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much again for coming on. Lynn, where could we find you on
Pleasure.
social media?
Oh,
Sorry.
you can find me at Rebel Risen on Instagram and at A Cosmic Love on Twitter slash X. And where can we find you?
You can find me at Andorisms on Instagram and Twitter slash X. And that's all for this week. We'll see you next week for another episode of Stardust Records. Bye bye.
Bye.
Bye.